interviewing Miss Jane Doolittle in Cortland, New York, September 30th, 1983. Miss Doolittle, can you remember how many girls graduated from Iran Bethel School?
No, I don't. I never calculated all of them, but I suppose they're about 1,000 throughout the years.
Could the girls enter colleges and universities after graduating from your school?
Yes. Yes, several of them did. Not necessarily in Tehran, but in Beirut and in the United States.
Could they go to schools, to colleges in Tehran?
Yes. That is when the universities were open in Tehran, versus there didn't used to be any universities. But by the time the universities were open and accepting girls as well as men, we were using the government program. And so they had their certificate from the government, which was what they needed for getting into the university there.
In addition to your work and services in school, were you in any way active in women's movement in Iran?
Not as such, no. Except as we taught them in their school programs and our contacts with them. But I was never a member of any of the women's groups.
Did any of your school graduates come to you for advice?
Yes, often they came.
What kind of advice they were looking for?
Well, all sorts of advice as to what they should do, whom they should marry, what they should do with their children, and so forth.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
I don't know that I could, really. Because they were, usually their contact with me with their problems was short. And they went back and went on their way and doing things.
What do you think was your greatest achievement?
I don't know that I had any achievement.
No, I really don't want you to be very humble. You had many great achievements, I believe.
Well, I think perhaps the fact that I reopened classes for the girls in 1940 after the schools were closed, and kept a group going, and kept working with the Alumni Association, because we had a very active Alumni Association doing all sorts of things. I think those were worthwhile, probably. If I hadn't kept the girls' school open, there wouldn't have developed any Demavan College. They used the school as the nucleus for that. Of course, when Miss Gray took over, her philosophy was quite different from mine. And things changed very much, but at least this women's college was open.
What do you consider was your failures?
My failures? Well, I think the failure to win many people to Christ, that was a real failure. But those who have been won to Christ are very keen Christians and good. I think too many of the so-called converts said they were Christian because they thought they would please a missionary. And as soon as a missionary was no longer around, they were no longer Christian. And in my position as the head of the school, I was very careful not to over-persuade anyone, because it wasn't useful. And, well, as you know, the Iranians, they like to do what they think will please the person they're working with. And I think too many of our, as I said, so-called converts just lapsed.
How much were you involved in the course of decision making as to what the mission has to do in Iran?
Well, of course, all of us met together every week to discuss the problems and decide on what should be done. We did that for many years. Every Monday afternoon after school, we all gathered together in one of the homes and discussed our problems. So I was involved that way.
Okay, let's go back to 1921 again. Can you please give me a physical description of Tehran at that time?
Yes, Tehran at that time, of course, had no paved roads. All the roads were just little dusty streets, and the transportation was entirely by droshkes. There were no taxis until much later, and the streets were dark at night, and the jubes, of course, were full of filth, more than they are now. No problem with getting water into the compound was something. As you know, the mihrabs came around in the middle of the night and with a lantern brought the water into your place. And then to obtain drinking water, we had to have the sakal bring his goat skin of water every day, either from the British Embassy or from the government outlet. I have visions of Tehran as being very dark and very dirty, and seeing nothing but veiled women on the streets. As you said, a person unveiled, such as we were, was outstanding because there were so few.
I heard from somebody that they had gates around the city of Tehran.
There were 13 gates at important sections of the country. It was just too bad they were done away with, but Reza Shah very wisely saw that they were too narrow and would obstruct traffic. I don't know what we would have done later on if we still had those gates, but they were beautiful. They were very nice. And of course, they used to be kept closed at night.
Do you remember where they were?
No, not all of them. Of course, there was one on Yusufabad, where Shahrazad is now, at the junction there, and the Dolat Gate, and the Qazvin Gate, all around the city. In those days, the city, of course, was so small, there were only 200,000 inhabitants, instead of the 4 million that we now boast of. And you could walk around the city in a few hours on the Khandaq. Yes. And when they filled that in, that moat, we wondered what was going to happen to the houses that were built on the moat. But I never saw anyone collapse. I think they did a good job of filling it properly. But that was something when they did away with that. And of course, they never have solved the problem of too much water since they did away with that moat. Whenever there's a heavy rainfall, the people in the south of the city get into trouble immediately. Floods, some terrible floods down there. If they kept the old moat, they would never have had that problem.
When you arrived in Tehran, you told me that you lived in Ghavam Saltaneh.
Yes.
Was that part of the city considered inside or within the gates or outside the
gates? Well, that was within the gates, yes.
It was?
Yes. Shahrazad was the first street outside the gates. Yes, but Tehran was in the city, but it was very much the northern part of the city. So when the modern Americans who came in such numbers spoke of my house as being in the southern part of the city, it was really funny because they just had no idea of how it used to be.
How many Americans were in Iran at that time?
Well, if there were 40 or 50, we thought we had a lot. And of course, most of those were missionaries. There weren't business people at that time at all. But I was looking to see at some old pictures, but which Mrs. Elder sent me, of our mission group back in, must have been 26. Well, there was a big group. I suppose there were 50 of us at that time. And then you look at it when things were closed out in 79, 80, there were just two families, the Settos and the Thomases, finished. Really, it's amazing the way the numbers went down.
In addition to missionaries, were there any other Americans? Like, was there an American embassy in Tehran?
When I first went there in 1921, there was no embassy belonging to the United States. They simply used a house quite near Kalama Sultanate. There was a big building which they used, the embassy. And then, of course, they bought it, and it was Sam Saeed who built the American embassy as it was. Now the Persian government was using that for I don't know what.
They're not using it at the moment, but they have plans for it.
Yeah.
Mr. Luther, can you please give me a historical background about this school when it was first opened and then through the years and how it's progressed?
Yes. When it first opened, an Armenian woman was in charge of a small day school, and that was under the church.
And that was the year?
That was 1872. Then they decided that they should have something that was in the hands of the missionary and that would be more profitable, perhaps. So they opened a dormitory and had two or three pupils. And that developed quite well. They had quite a number of students. But the girls left so soon, because they said, oh, any girl who was 16 years old, she must be married, and there's no point in her being in school. So they had this system of contracts with the parents that the girls were to stay in the school for a certain number of years. And that helped a great deal. As I said, all the girls then were Armenians. They were taken in free. They got their meals, their clothes, their education, and everything for free. But they were on contract. But that lasted perhaps 10 years, not more than that. And some of the missionaries objected, thought it wasn't a good idea. But it had accomplished its purpose in keeping girls in school for several years. They started, of course, with the first class and went eventually through the 12th class. But those were really old girls. Oh, I remember so distinctly when I was first there back in 1921 to 24, there was one girl in the upper classes who came to school very irregularly. We couldn't find out why. Every week she would be absent a couple of days. And upon investigation, we found that her family wouldn't let her go to school regularly, because then people would know that she was going to school and would criticize. So they'd send her Monday and Wednesday and Friday 1 week, and perhaps Tuesday and Thursday the next week, so that she wouldn't be on the streets. And at that time, most of the girls came to school with an attendant. They brought a servant with them who would carry her lunch, which she would eat there at the school, and then leave her. They were very closely guarded.
How was the school financed?
It was financed from money from the board in America, the Presbyterian board. And the girls didn't pay anything, absolutely nothing. When I got there in 1921, the fees were from 3 to 6 reals a month, or a term was, I'm not sure which, but anyway, it was nothing. But of course, expenses were nothing. I mean, they'd feed a group of 20 girls on 5 tamans a week. So
how was now, Mr. Little, how much were you charging as tuition from the girls who were recently or lately registered in the school?
I really have forgotten, but I think it was between 300 and 400 tamans for the year.
Only that much?
Pardon me?
Only that much?
Yes. And of course we thought that was high. But that took care of our needs. And that tuition helped a lot with my work among the poor. You see, I got started among the poor when I was out of a job, really, when the school was developing. And then when we bought that big building, we were able to open the clinic. And the girls really supported it by their tuition. We didn't have any money at all from the Presbyterian board. It was all on our own.
Oh, you were not getting any help?
No, no. We were self-supporting, also supporting the clinic. Which, after all, we should be doing.
What would you like to see to happen to the school and the clinic in future?
Well, the school, of course, is completely out of my hands. As I said, Miss Gray has quite a different philosophy from mine. I kept the school small because I thought you could have much more influence when you knew the girls. When you have over 1,000 girls, you can't know them, and you can't do much with them, especially when they no longer have any chapel or anything like that. Whereas with a small group such as we had, naturally I knew all the girls and taught all of them, and we had daily chapel. We had religious literature for them to refer to. So for the clinic, I would be glad if the clinic came back again into the hands of the alumni. Of course, as I said, it's been taken from us entirely. The government is running it. And I'm sure it's on quite a different basis from what we had.
What do you think that would happen to Iran in future? How do you see the future of Iran?
I don't at present. I only hope that the communists will not get in. The fact that they've put out a good many of them recently is encouraging. But of course that's the communist aim, to get in there, have their access to warm water, which they don't have. If they don't come in, I don't know what will happen. They say that they have people well trained to take over from Khomeini. I think there's got to be another revolution before things are solved.
While you were serving in Iran, have you ever been attacked or intruded by communists or other parties?
No, never.
Did you ever have any girls with communist ideas in your school?
I think there were some, yes, but they were not the majority by any amount of means.
There was a time that the school boys and girls were very active in political affairs.
Yes.
In 50s, yes. Early 50s. How was your school?
It didn't
facing?
Have any connection with any of those things. I think very few of our girls were involved.
And at that time, I remember they used to call and strike and close down the schools.
Yes.
Did it ever happen to your school?
No. Once upon a time, we were in trouble with the Ministry of Education because apparently one of the girls in the school complained that we had chapel. So they sent for me to come down and see the minister, and he asked about the chapel, and I said, yes, we're a Christian school and we have daily prayers. I said, if you want to, come and listen. So they sent a delegation to school at the hour of prayer, and they were so pleased with it they sent their relatives to the school after. And there were no more objections. I think the chapel hour could be a very good force in more. The girls all seemed to like chapel, and I think it had a great deal to do with molding their characters, their ideals. We had some very good speakers. At one time, one of our graduates, who was a convert from Islam, although she didn't become a Christian until several years after she left the school, she was one of the teachers, and she did a fine job of giving and chapel talks, because with her background she talked their language and did very well. And in connection with that, I was again called down to the Minister of Education and wanting to know what chapel was. So I explained to them, and then when I came back to school I told this person about the objections, and she said, well, what shall I do? Shall I soft-pedal it? And I said, no. We're here for that purpose. If we can't have chapels and can't have a good talk to them at chapel, there's no point in our being. So she went on, although she knew that she was being criticized and might be in trouble. But she went on with her programs and did a good job.
Who were the people who gave you the greatest assistance in Iran? And in what way?
I don't know, it's hard to say. There are so many people that helped me in various ways. of course, they, a great many of our girls were from the upper classes, and they had pull, they had the know-how, and they could get things done for us, both for the clinic and for the school. I think they were a help. But as to any one individual as being a special help, I don't think there was any.
Who was your closest colleague?
In the school, to begin with, the first 3 years that I was there, Charlotte Young was my closest friend. And then, of course, she got married. Then when I went back, when I had been here in 24 through 26, I attended some of the classes at the seminary in New York, and one point made by one of the professors was that all missionaries should make friends among the nationals and not stick to themselves. He thought it was very important. And so when I went back, Gertrude Noel was there, and she was in her own mission, and she was very discouraged because she was all alone. So we became friends, and she has been my friend all through the years. I think if I hadn't been there, she would have gone back to England. She couldn't take it, because in her circumstances, she was really an outsider. I mean, having studied in England all the years that she did, and having her mixed parenthood, Armenian and Jewish, that was difficult. And so the family didn't take her in too much. And as a matter of fact, she really doesn't know her Armenian relatives. She identified more with the Jewish group because she was working among the Jews. But she just had no friends. And of course, in our mission, there were just the two of them, she and Riz Domnus. So I think that was very fortunate that we could live together and help each other in various ways, although we never worked together, except with some of our Friday schools. We got those groups to compete with each other and to see each other every year and things like that.
Ms. Doolittle, I want to thank you very much for the opportunity that you gave me for this interview.
It was very nice having you here. I appreciate your coming. It's a long trip to come for the little information I could give you.
Oh, the information that you gave us was great. And thank you very much again.
Thank you for coming.